Hi, Collective Table listeners. This is Chelsea Simon here, and I'm joined by Talib.
Hello, hello.
And today we have a very exciting episode for you. We are talking with Cameron Malachi Overton. We're particularly talking to Cameron today about a song he wrote called I'll Sing a Praise to You. It's a beautiful song. We will have a link to it, so you have to go listen to it. But really today we're going to get to know Cameron a little bit and talk about how he came up with this song, what it means to him, what he hopes for it. We're glad you're with us. And Cameron, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're very excited to, I was saying earlier that I found you through the Liberation Project, which if you don't know about the Liberation Project, go check that out. They're doing amazing roundtable conversations and they have curriculum and they have some music. And so this is how we found Cameron and really just kind of shared values of the liberation of all people and working for justice and being grounded in faith and spirituality. So it's like a kindred spirit here that we have today. But Cameron, maybe for our audience who doesn't know you, can you just share a little bit about yourself? Like, what would you want our audience to know about you?
Yeah, my name is Cameron. I use he, him, his pronouns. I am one of the pastors at a church in Milwaukee called Zao MKE Church. I am not it's a United Methodist church, though we are very much on the fringes. Our tenets are we're Jesus-rooted, justice-centered, and radically inclusive. I'm not ordained. My spouse, actually, Jonah, who uses they-them pronouns, is the lead pastor. I've just recently become the executive pastor, though I have been the worship pastor there for pretty much the existence of Zao. And Zao is a church plant, so we started it from scratch. It started in Jonah's living room and kind of grew into what we are today. And so I'm also a professor of social work and have done social work type of jobs for many, many years. And again, I'm not a ordained person in the United Methodist Church, but I'm lucky enough to call myself pastor at Zao. So those are some of the things I do, like who I am. I'm a Black person who is a queer and trans person. Because of all those things put me in a position where I've had a lot of experiences of what I would have wanted to be just things in the world. And so when I learned of liberation theology and the story of Jesus in a lens of liberation, and that took many years, but once I got there, my whole entire world has been changed by that type of Jesus. And so that truly is who I'm grounded in, what I want to do with my life and make sure that others know about that kind of Jesus. So that's really who is Cameron. That's Cameron.
That's wonderful. And what was the sort of musical influences that you've had growing up, and how did that work out with church? Were you in the church? Did any of this stuff come around, or was it separate? Did you have musical outside of church, musical inside of church? What was that sort of like growing up and then to now?
Yeah, jokingly, I said that I was probably born in a church, the earliest memories are of me in church. Music was a huge part of my family's life. So my mom was on the worship team leading. My grandpa was, a deacon. My grandma was running the children's ministry. We were always at church. And I remember as a very small itty bitty child being sat on a chair with my mom, and we would sing. Do you all know who Sandy Patty and the Good News Club or something like that?
Yeah.
Anyway, so
yeah,
we
absolutely
okay. So we would sing in church. It's Sandy Patty was this white woman who would just sang for all she was, and then they had these little children, and that was the I don't remember what it was really called, not gonna lie to you. But yeah, but there were these songs where she would sing with children, and so at church they thought that was the most adorable thing. At 3 years old, I'm sitting up there singing with my mother, songs like that. So I've done music in church, I've done music outside of church. Again, it's just kind of who I was and was created because of the influence on my family. I'm a person who I think grew up in a very, very conservative evangelical church. So when I hear songs like the word Chris Tomlin, the name Chris Tomlin, I'm like, oh, yep, sang every single one of those. Hillsong, all those things. But at home, we would also be very influenced by gospel and spiritish filled music at home. And so there's a lot of definite Christian artist influences on my upbringing.
You talked about this lens of Jesus as like liberator comes through, but growing up, what was your relationship with Jesus? Like, what was church like? How did that influence who you are? Like, what was that? Like, unpack that a little bit for us.
Yeah. So, you know, growing up in a conservative evangelical, and I would say white dominant space also in church, I was a young queer and trans black kid who had a lot of questions. All of those questions were very simply answered by, well, it's very clear in the Bible,
yeah.
Right? And so I was a rebel in church because I was asking questions and I wasn't satisfied with the answers that I was getting because I'm like, wait a second, we sing how great is our God, how big is our God, how this is our God. And yet you're saying that if I don't think exactly this way, that all those people are going straight to hell, right? That was the kind of fire and brimstone that I was, you know, created in through things like my own personal traumas, through things like watching how others interacted from my church to people around them. I was really turned off by God in some really significant ways. And I always knew that there was something like holding me to God. And I didn't really understand what that thing was, but it was always there. And so I went through a lot of years of re-praying the quote unquote sinner's prayer, right? Like over and over and over being like, I know I messed up again, but I know that there's something here for me. And I don't know what that thing is, but I'm continuing to try to be quote unquote faithful. The more that I did that, the more that I ended up like internalizing a lot of hate toward myself. And it took a lot of years to be liberated. And that's why I love like, you know, the word liberation from that toxic understanding of God, who in my head was God the Father, right? Only a man. God the Father, who was lording over us, who like had, we were all these puppets who like got technical free will, but like really he knew what we were going to do. And so like it never felt like there was this co-creation of life that was happening. And I was always scared every day of doing something wrong to go to hell. And I knew as a queer and trans person that any action of me living my full and true self was just that. Like, don't ever live your full and true self, because if you do, you're going straight to hell. And so that really was my relationship growing up with God in this really just toxic, weird way, because I wanted so badly to live the life that I knew I was here on this earth to do, and being told all of these lies of what that really should look like. So it was a very confusing time growing up till I finally met, for me, the real Jesus.
Well, I feel like you said so much in there. I've so many more questions now. But I think for so many people that grow up with toxic religion that have to kind of unlearn so much theology and unlearn who God, they were taught God was, there is this internalized fear and hatred. And how did you heal yourself? I mean, how did that process? Because I often wonder for people, especially queer people that are in the church, just the damage that has been done, why not walk away? And what you're saying is there's something there that I know is there's enough truth holding me on. Like, maybe just talk about that a little bit, because I think our audience is really kind of in that same space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And honestly, like, for some people, they have to walk away. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to be really upfront and clear about that, because I think that that is healthy and holy and beautiful to walk away from toxic BS that is holding you from not being fully who you are and fully flourishing in this life. That is not what God wants. God does not want us to have abusive relationships. And so, like, for some people, that's necessary. My story was one of, again, like, I had personal traumas that happened to me as a child at the same kind of times, which got me into things like drugs and alcohol, which got me into toxic relationships. It made me, again, hate myself. And I got out of the town in which I grew up and ended up in a bigger city. In that place, having to ask myself, like, who are you, was a really important time of my life. There were points in which I got to points where I did not want to live. And I think the only thing that was making me live was continuing to be in these weird, like, toxic spaces with, again, with drugs and alcohol. And I think there was an actual moment, I remember it very clearly, of the moment of looking myself in the mirror and saying, like, this is not the life God wanted for you. There has to be something better and bigger out there for you. And knowing again that I was talking to God in that moment, right? Like, I don't know why, but I was talking to God in that moment and saying, okay, then where am I supposed to go? And it was then that I did a weird thing and I dedicated my life to God. That was one of the best moments of my life and also the hardest moment of my life, because the way I did that was to weirdly like kind of go backwards into the closet. And I joined some like really conservative like campus ministries that I won't say out loud. And I actually joined them full time, like as a staff member, moved my whole life to a different city, Milwaukee, and said, I'm going to dedicate my whole life to inner city mission work. Immediately when I got to Milwaukee and I started to think about God and to figure out like who, again, asking that question, like, who really are you? I finally was like, oh, I'm so queer. I'm so queer and I cannot take it. I am so queer. And by the way, I'm in love with that specific person and we're living together. And so I got fired.
I was wondering what happened.
So quickly. they did a horrible thing to me. Horrible. It was a horrible time. I got fired. I got exiled from that community. That community was connected to my church. I had no community. I'm not from Milwaukee. I don't know anyone here. And in that moment, this is where everybody asks your question, which is like, why?
Yeah.
Why would you stay? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. And again, there was something, and there were always these little glimmers of people who were like, I don't always agree with you, but you got something there that we should talk about a little. You know, I had a few people who like sat with me and said, like, what's happening to you is not right. You're right. Like, God must be different than this. Like, let's think about this together, even if I can't agree with your quote unquote lifestyle. And in those moments, I finally was free of this toxic relationship with God, this toxic relationship with church, this toxic relationship with all these people, where I could just sit actually at the feet of God and say for the first time, who am I? And who I am became more and more and more and more because I got to actually ask those questions with God rather than other people who are trying to construct that for me. And all of a sudden, God is expanding in my head. My identity is expanding in my head. This is about the time where I finally am like, oh my gosh, I am queer, but I'm also really trans, y'all. Like, I've been so trans since I was 3 when I was singing Sandy Patty. I'm super trans. Like, I've been trying to tell y'all for a very long time. And so, you know, I came out as trans. I came out as queer. I finally started to think about the fact that, like, oh, people have been interpreting who God is for me rather than me doing some of that work for myself. And when I get to do that, there's these lenses in which people read the Bible. There's lenses in which people interpret all these things. And the thing that I know God to be is an expansive bubble of love and justice. And so if that is the case, then all of these horrible things that I've ever learned cannot be true. And I'm so liberated by the fact that, like, I knew that in my gut, in my heart, and in my spirit, I knew that what they were teaching me was not right. And I'm finally finding these streams that are very much smaller, but I'm finding these streams of beautifully perfect and pure water that I'm finally drinking from. And I can't get enough. And so, you know, again, that's when I was introduced to other folks who were on the more radical side who are saying, like, hey, there's this thing called liberation theology. I believe in a Jesus who is a brown-skinned radical revolutionary who stood up to powers. And one of those powers is the current white conservative church that you have been dominated. Your black body has been dominated by white supremacy. And I'm like, oh, like I am finally here. And this is what I knew always in my spirit was really, I think, the thing holding me on, because I knew there was this truth that I was missing and I wanted it really badly.
Wow. Preach.
I was just going to say, I'm so glad they call you pastor, because that was just a it felt like a little sermon right there.
So like Paul and Silas, I will sing you a song, your song.
And you know, we've come out of this, the Sandy Patty, you know, the Gaither Choir, all of that sort of movement where, you know, we need more voices. We need more people coming to the table and sitting down. And it's so great that you've stuck around, you know, and I think even as you're unpacking some of the theology way or the way that you see God and how it's affected your music, where are you landing right now with sort of the way that you, even the song specifically, coming to the place with Paul and Silas? Like, what was the inspiration with this specific song? It's so beautiful.
Yeah. So first, there's a reclaiming that I think a lot about. So at Zao, you know, I've been the worship pastor, and I still continue to do that. And awesome. And so much of what we do at Zao is reclaiming some of that toxic crap that has been given to us, right? So many of the people who come to me at Zao have similarly been hurt by church, right? They've been thrown out of churches. Like I missed those things, but I was thrown out of churches. I've been, wow, you know, fired from all these Christian places, have been told, you know, you're worth nothing because of your quote unquote lifestyle. And so many of those people come to me at Zao and say, like, but you're still here. And I'm like, yes. And so, and all of that was BS, point blank, period. Right? And we are now able to then create something new, right? Yeah. We are able to say, we actually don't play with those systems because they are never going to give us life. What we can do is start something new from scratch, right? And that's what I loved about Zao, is that it was in the DNA that a person who is a Black, queer, and trans person can come, and it is for me. It's actually not for those other folks who have been hurting me. It's for me. Mm. And so therefore it's for you. It's taken me a long time to figure out the difference between liberation and trying to change systems. I'll answer your question, but I need to get here first, is because I've been to churches where they try to do like third way things. And in those churches, what that meant was we talk about how it's really important to be caring about queer and trans people. But the thing is that we can all just come to the table with all the different opinions, and it'll be beautiful because from this side and that side, we all sit at the feet of Jesus. I've been to those churches. Those churches changed me to be able to have the questions and to come to who I am today. They're very important. And there's a next step for people like me, which is that I go to Zao and we talk about being queer and trans, and we talk about Black Lives Matter, and we talk about all the things that matter all the time. And sometimes we actually don't have to talk about those things,
right?
Because it's just in our DNA. It's who we are. It's not who we're trying to become. It's who we are. And it was created by people like me. So that we are always learning. That's not it. Like, that's part of liberation, is we're always learning. We're always trying to go to the next level. But there's a difference between inclusion and radical inclusion. And that's really what I'm trying to articulate, is that for me, inclusion means like everyone's welcome. And that feels really nice for some people. And some people have never actually felt what it means to be radically included. Mm. And radical inclusion for me is that the most marginalized are held up. The most marginalized are the ones that we listen to first. The most marginalized are who we think of when we are making decisions and programming and all the things. And so if a Black, queer, and trans woman who is a person who has a ability challenge cannot come to our thing, we are not being radically inclusive, because that's the person that I'm most holding up in all of the things that I'm doing. Mm. And so I think when we can get to that point, that feels like liberation, where when you are free, I am free. And when I am free, you are free. It's necessary for all of us, right? And that's where we get into the question of, like, that's the thing I needed to get to when I start thinking about music at Zao. So a lot of people come from traditions where they hear a Hillsong song, for instance. Oops, there's a thing happening with Hillsong right now, right? And but they come in and they hear me singing a Hillsong song and they're like, wait a second. Like, here's all this like harmful theology. Here's all this harmful stuff that's happening. And I've been hurt in churches that sing this song. And I say, yes, that has hurt me too. And the God of all creation, I think, is trying to reconcile all things to God's self. And so I, Cameron, am reclaiming the beauty in that song for me. Because I'm allowed to and I get to do that. What song would make you feel amazing? Because I want to sing that song. I want to know the spirit in which, you know, is moving you. What can I sing at Zao to make you feel radically included? Because I don't want to harm you either. And so that's the kind of thing that happens for me at Zao around music. And so again, in the spirit of like that liberation where you aren't free if I'm not free and I'm not free if you're not free, this is where it gets tricky. Because as a Black and queer and trans person, there's a lot of oppression that I've had to deal with. There's a lot of people around me who are similar to me who have had to deal with a lot of oppression. And it is hard because until the jailer understands that and allows God to move to break the jails, like in the Paul and Silas story, that liberation is for the jailer. It's also is mostly for me, right? Because I want out. I want out of the jail. But it's also for the jailer. Because until I am free, the jailer can't be free. Because the jailer is still living in a system and participating in a system that is holding me in jail. And so in 2020, when the world shut down and social media became our best friend to start to shed light on a thing that Black people have been trying to shed light on forever. Mm-hmm. We all heard the name George Floyd. And at Zao anyway, we started to do some really radical things with our building. It was shut down to everything because of COVID, but we opened it up to the streets. And we became a drop-in distribution center for protest supplies, where anyone who wanted to do anything outside on the streets that had to do with Black Lives Matter movement work was allowed and able at any moment, 24/7, to come to our door and to say, we need medical supplies, we need water, we need food, and we need it now. And we said, you got it. Well, I'll be there in 2 minutes. You know, with the Liberation Project, like you mentioned earlier, part of what I have always held on to is music. And I love writing songs, but part of that, it's hard to create, right? But taking all of that emotion, I was like, there's a song that needs to be written here for me, just for my own self. And I'm not sure what that is because I'm really mad. Like I'm angry and I don't know how to ever explain to people in my life who are like, quote unquote, against the Black Lives Matter movement that like, this is for me, somebody you say you love, but also this is for you because you're in a messed up system that you are continuing to be a part of and you don't even know how confined you are by white supremacy. Mm-hmm. I was talking with some of the folks at the Liberation Project and we talked about this story of Paul and Silas and I got to the point where I'm like, I was just saying like, once again, like, God, like, where are you? Right. And like, I'm so tired. I'm tired of having this conversation. I don't know what else to do. I guess I'll sing a praise.
Yeah.
And so that's really where this story came from, was like, when I don't know what else to do, I'll sing a praise to you, that like the gospel of liberation is a gospel, not just for me, but again, for the jailer, right? Like that once I am free, that jailer could finally also be free. And I hope that someday all of us will like do that together.
My gospel of liberation brings freedom to us all.
So that really was the inspiration for the song and a really long answer to your question.
It's a great answer. I mean, even thinking about true liberation, it's for all. I mean, that's the idea. It's not just for the jailed. I love that. Thank you for sharing that.
I think about that all the time. Like, I mean, even someone, don't turn off the podcast, but even someone like Donald Trump, I just think about how broken he is, like how hurting he is to be able to act in those ways, and like liberation for him too. Like that brings freedom for all of us. And it's all so interconnected. You have a line, my favorite line in the song, "My gospel of liberation brings freedom for us all." And it doesn't feel that way. Like what you're saying, Cameron, right? Like I'm so tired of having this conversation. Even, I mean, since George Floyd, we've continued to have, you know, I mean, there's continued to be. So what do you do then? Like, how do you keep hopeful?
This is a really, really like cheesy answer, but it's the only one I have. Is that I believe in the word and the life of Jesus. And that is the sometimes the only hope that I have. Honestly, like, you know, we just went through a whole season of being in Lent, right? Where we like journeyed toward the cross, and we just had Easter where like Jesus rises from the dead, right? Like, and theoretically, like we had a sermon on how Jesus is an abolitionist, right? Where like, what did Jesus do between the cross and resurrection was like, go to hell and jailbreak everyone who was in jail, right? Like Jesus is an abolitionist. And so like, for me, that's the only hope that I have is Jesus the abolitionist, because I know that this whole world is in chains, and I know that the chains are heavier for people like me, but like, I do have this belief and this hope that we are connected in a way that if we could actually start breaking chains, they all could break. Mm-hmm. And that's really the only hope I have is in the life of Jesus. And it's because I saw what Jesus was able to do on this earth and what Jesus then is calling me into, which is to continue that message. And it's not the white like surfer Jesus message of like love everyone. It's literally the brown skin revolutionary Jesus again, who stood up to empire and said, your empire is hurting people. Your definition of like who's in and who's out is marginalizing and killing, and I won't stand for it. And I, in fact, will go and I will organize and I will continue to yell in the street and riot if I have to bring liberation to all people. And I will do that by starting with the radical inclusion, which is on the margins, right? And so like that is the hope for me. And I think that like when people don't have an understanding of liberation, if people don't have the ability to have like kind of a prophetic imagination as to like what is possible, it is hopeless. It's incredibly hopeless. But like the work of abolition, and for me, the work of like that liberation theology is to keep dreaming. And I can only keep dreaming because I have connection to my own self, to like what I think could be better. But also I have connection to other like marginalized voices who are saying, we know what it could be like to be free. And so like that is what continues to be hope for me in the hopelessness of this world, because there's a lot of it. I mean, every day, you know, you mentioned like, yes, George Floyd happened. George Floyds have been being murdered for forever and ever. And George Floyds are continuing to be murdered every other day. I mean, just last week, another, you know, here we are in Michigan talking one more time. And it's going to continue until we finally break the systems of white supremacy. In my opinion, one of the places of white supremacy is using policing to police black bodies. And that has been the way that it has been. And so that's a system that I want to break. And so those are the things that keep me going, is knowing where I'm headed, even though I have no idea what that's going to look like. But that is hopeful to me.
I love how you talk about Jesus. Jesus as organizer, Jesus as protester, Jesus. I mean, it just makes it so practical. And when you can see Jesus that way, yeah, like I'll sing a praise to you in the midst of the systems and the relationships and the interpersonal, you know, demons, that I'll just sit down here and I will sing a praise to you. And that all the work I do is grounded in that, then your work has a different purpose. So thank you for sharing that. So you released this song. What was feedback like? Like, what did people say? How did people receive it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we sang it at Zao, of course. And there, I think one of the most, I think what was impactful about it, and what the feedback I kind of got was the fact that at the end of the song, there's a moment where I pulled up, you know, hundreds of names of people who have been murdered by the police. We said every single one of those names. And that was a list, right? Like, that was a list that will, again, continue to be added to. But amidst the, like, I'm singing a praise, I don't really know what else to do. I know that there's this liberation, and we have to be real about, we need to say the names of all those folks who this has impacted. And so, you know, I think people like are like, oh, that's a cute song. And then like it gets to that moment and people are like, that was a lot of names. I'm like, and there's more and there's going to be more. And so I think that really was the biggest kind of response that I got, was how impactful and meaningful that moment of the song, which is to me was kind of a moment of reflection, of remembrance, but also of protest and of saying like, hey, I'm in the streets, and some of those chants, you know, say the name. And so we're going to say these names. And when we sing it at Zao, we're going to say these names, and we're going to add the names, and we're going to remember these names, and we're going to fight so that no more names get added to this list. So I think that was one of the biggest feedback moments, I think, was when people get to the end of that song and really think through, oh my gosh, that's a lot of names, and a lot of names that I don't know anything about. And so I think that's really important too.
Do you write your music from, are you a bass player? I see a bass. The audience in the podcast doesn't see there's a bass behind you. When you wrote this song, even, what did you go to? Was it just like on a phone?
I just sat with an acoustic guitar and, you know, did what Chris Tomlin does best, which is pick up four chords and cycle them. And then, you know, kind of piece together some of my feelings. Honestly, I sat with post-it notes, because I don't know why that's all I had, but post-it notes, and just kind of put feelings on post-it notes, put a couple lines on post-it notes, and then thought through, you know, the story of Paul and Silas and what that was really meaning to me in that moment, and putting some of that on a post-it note, and it kind of came together. And when I'm writing a song, I write songs all the time, but they're always like a chorus. And then I'm like, I have no idea how to put a verse on this kind of thing. That's really all my songs. But yeah, so I have a lot of snippets all the time. I have a phone and a recorder, and I always pull it out, and I'm just kind of like, beep, 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 beep. And then like you have like a snippet on your phone.
When the world is silent, still I scream your name. Elijah, Trayvon, Brianna, Sandra, Dontre. Michael. When the world is silent, still I scream your name. Eric, Philando, Tamir, Alton, Walton.
I'll say your name. I'll say your name.
And if you see the YouTube video, the names are all written there. And like you were saying, when you're reading them, how many it feels. But and when you see them all stacked on top of each other, it's just this overwhelming power of like, when you're singing, I'll sing a praise to you. It's like you have a foot in reality of like, this is actually happening, and a foot in what you were talking about, like this prophetic imagination of what it can be. And it's like very visual in that moment. So if you watch the video,
I think that's actually what we're called to do as Christians, is to like live in the like here and now, but also like live in the possibilities, right? Like the what could come, that prophetic imagination. And so often it's hard to live in that middle. I think that's the worst place to be, but like that's where we're called to do the work. And I think some people get stuck in kind of one or the other, right? Like, or even just like what has been, right? Like, especially that for Christians. But I think, again, we're called to be holding on to those tensions, because we know that something better can come. But we know that we are here actually on this earth to do the work. I think that's what we're called to. I don't think that's what everybody thinks we're called to. I think a lot of people think we're called to only what comes after life. But Jesus was really about life. Like, in fact, when he died, he kind of resurrected back to life. And so like we're supposed to be life people. And so I think, again, that's where life is in the middle right there.
We're supposed to be life people. I like that. So what's next for you? What is there more music coming? What are you working on?
Yeah, there's always music happening, you know? Right now, fortunately, I should say, I have multiple jobs. I am also getting my doctorate in social work, and so it takes a little bit of time to do that, but I'm always creating, always making music. One of the things with the Liberation Project that I was hopeful for and will continue to be hopeful for is that maybe there would be, you know, people who want to do music like creating music that is liberative, that would want to do that with me. And we would create something beautiful together. One of my favorite collectives right now is Common Hymnal.
Yeah.
Holy buckets. Like, if you don't know Common Hymnal, please go listen to Common Hymnal. Like, that's the kind of stuff I want to make. And I want to do that with other people of color. I want to do that with other queer and trans folks. I want to create a different narrative than our typical, usual, you know, Hillsong and hymn situation. And I think that we could do that if we all just figured out a way to, like, get together. So that is definitely something that I'm hopeful for with, you know, either the work at Zao that I'm doing or with the Liberation Project. So yeah, feel free to reach out to me because if there is ever a minute that I can be creating music with other folks like me, I would want to take that really, really seriously.
Well, Cameron, thank you for your work in the world, for social work and your work at Zao and Liberation Project and the music you're creating. Thank you for your time today. You have such a sweet spirit, but also such like a justice oriented. And those two things are hard to hold. It goes back to that tension you were talking about. We hope to have many more conversations with you. And so we'll be following your work and seeing what God leads you to. But thank you for your time today.
Of course. Thank you again for having me and just the work that you all are doing. I know that this is how we do it together, right? Is to come together to get things out there that are out there. And so thank you for what you're doing as well.
God, help me to remember that your promised love remains. God, help me to remember that your promised love remains.